Hi, I'm George Gale, and this is Fundamentals of Organizing. A little bit about me. In my early 20s, I was working at a soup kitchen in southern Indiana. And I had this other job as a live-in staff at a group home for people who were mentally ill and homeless. I felt great about the work I was doing. But then the soup kitchen line, it just kept getting longer. And so did the number of people who struggled with mental illness and had no place to live. Yeah, nobody starved on our watch, but the reasons people lacked for food and shelter remained. We started to organize, or at least we tried, but we just didn't know how. Then an organizer named Mike Evans gave us a copy of Shell Trapp's Basics of Organizing, a pamphlet that spelled out the steps to get started. It included things like go knock on doors and listen for issues that people are pissed about, organize house meetings around those issues, identify a target who could, if properly motivated, deliver on your demand, and so on. What once seemed so mysterious now made sense, and we were off and running. That was 1994. I've been organizing for the 30 years since then, and now I want to pay it forward, which is how the Fundamentals of Community Organizing pamphlet was born. In it, I spell out a few dozen fundamentals of the craft that have been a bedrock for me and countless others. I hope it can be helpful to you like Trapp's Basics of Organizing was for me. You can get a copy at fundamentalsoforganizing.org. And in this special edition of the podcast, I'm going to share the audio version of the pamphlet for you to revisit whenever you need. I hope you'll join the conversation. Let's get started. Introduction. Why the Fundamentals? I was raised by lions and trained by wolves. Larger than life, they were legends of the craft. Their organizing was worthy of make-believe, and yet somehow all of it was true. Organizers as raw as rough sawn wood and as honest as dirt. An imperfect lot, they were out of place in their prime and would be unrecognizable today. They had blind spots, yes, just as we all have blind spots today. And yet they were among the very best at organizing, the craft of getting lots of people to come together and do things they had never imagined and win. These were people who lacked not for directness. They had reverence for little. The rules were meant to be broken, and break them they did. If they had reverence for anything, it was the fundamentals of the craft, ones that go back to before organizing became a job. Coming up, the fundamentals were the air we breathed. Some had slogans, others were more elusive. Though not dead yet, they are worthy of a revival. I, for one, believe the times demand it. That is why I wrote The Fundamentals of Community Organizing. I started organizing 30 years ago, and so many people have helped me learn how to do the thing, and I'm still learning. Now I want to pay forward the investments that people made in me by passing along what they taught and what I've learned along the way. The book is broken down into 6 chapters, and each chapter features a collection of related fundamentals. Let's go. Chapter 1, Getting Started. Because there are some fundamentals you want to know before you even begin. Power. Power is the ability to marshal forces, people, money, and ideas to move things. It is something many of us are taught to fear, a force marshaled against us. Power is neutral. It can be used for good or evil. We build it to be held by large groups of people who want justice for themselves and others too. We organize to transform potential power into actual power. Potential power exists in a neighborhood, within a class, workplace, or political district. But until organized into a force that can act as one, it's all untapped potential. Potential power is everywhere. 10,000 unorganized people ripped off by payday lenders are individual victims, completely disconnected. Organized, they are a power block that could challenge and change the industry. A building of unorganized tenants is at the mercy of the property owner. Organized, they could refuse to pay rent and become a force to be reckoned with. Think of power broadly. Power is more than the size of your membership. It is the time, money, and relationships members are willing to risk. Power is the relationships the organization has forged, the funds it has raised, the capacities created. It could be the organization's moral standing in the community. Power comes in many forms. Know which kind you're building. The organizer. Organizers get people to come together to build power to change the things they most want changed. We enter a situation that looks much like this. People are yearning for change, but are beaten down, scattered, and unorganized. The unifying issues are there, but people are not talking about them. If they are talking about them, it's with little faith that anything can be done. Until these conditions are changed, things will remain the same. And the same is not okay. Disrupting this arrangement is no small feat. Most of us are taught to go it alone, not to come together, to follow the rules, not to rock the boat, to stay in our place, not to act powerfully. Also, things continue to get better for one group at the expense of another. Enter the organizer, who carries forth the countercultural act of organizing. The organizer agitates us to take on battles we had never imagined. They listen and empathize, provoke and inspire, strategize and coach. They spur us to act, teach us to plan, and help us digest. The organizer does all of this and more. This is why organizing is so powerful and not so easy. Activism is not organizing. You have not chosen the quickest path to power. I hope you know that. You could build power for yourself more quickly if you won an elected office or became a social media star. Instead, you've decided to do something different, to build the power of many people with many people. It is simply a different thing. Activism is in vogue these days, and we're definitely better for it. But let's not mistake activism for organizing. An activist is active in the fight, maybe even leads in it. An organizer develops the power of others within that fight, often one by one and sometimes many at a time. You do many things in this work, but if you are not developing other people, you are not organizing. If you are developing others, when you are done, there'll be victories people can point to, but also souls changed in ways everlasting. It's this that most separates organizing from activism. All organizing is reorganizing. Power is organized in a specific way, whether in a neighborhood or school, a city or state, a sector of the economy. The way power is currently organized is most often not good for a specific group of people. That group could be people with low incomes, people of color, women, rural people, disabled people, or working class people who have all kinds of other identities. Say we're preparing to build a new organization in a city. Chances are, real estate developers run the show. They plan to divest in some areas and gentrify others, and are working in tandem with elected officials to have their way. We will find that districts are drawn to protect the status quo, and working class people have been divided along racial lines. This arrangement is not random. It has been organized for the benefit of the few at the expense of the many. Organizers are here to disorganize this configuration of power and reorganize it into something more just. To do this, we grow the power of people who've been on the receiving end of evil acts and reduce the power of those perpetrating them. All organizing is reorganizing. Seize openings. Reorganizing can take years, sometimes generations. Then there are moments that invite us to rethink how the whole thing works. Much of the best organizing happens inside a crisis. An immigration raid in a small town, a financial crash that stretches across the globe, a climate disaster, anywhere. Crises are awful. People are in great pain. Systems have failed them. And if there is an immediate rush of compassion, it often fades, and people are left asking hard questions. If there's a silver lining, it is that people are receptive to organizing and rethinking things like never before. This is an opening. Openings emerge through winning, too. When we elect a movement candidate or pass a law that gives communities new leverage, we have improved the context for all our organizing. We see, spark, and seize openings. Now, I'm not suggesting you pivot with every shift in conditions. If you did, you would drive lots of people mad along the way to nowhere. But do have an eye for when a change in conditions inspires people to rethink old arrangements. When those openings align with what you seek to move, be prepared to clear the calendar, scrap the old plan, and walk through the newly opened door. Chapter 2, Meeting People, because seeing people is the core of organizing. Start where people are. Starting where people are is the most essential organizer superpower. Still, it's not in our nature to do this. We tend to start where we are, with what we want and what we believe. When we instead meet people where they are, new openings emerge, expanding who we can organize and make meaning with. Look, it's comfortable to be in rooms where we all already agree. But organizing is powerful because we assemble people who don't agree on all things, but on enough things, and who under the right circumstances can come together on more. The fact that we don't yet see eye to eye is good. We are finally in a room together. Now the work can begin. Starting where people are applies not only to where people stand on issues, but where they stand on themselves. Many people believe they will never be a leader. We arrive not to tell them they are wrong, but to understand why. Then, with a relationship, we help them make the jump from where they are now to where they could be. We start where people are, but it's where they end up that matters. Organizing creates a path towards waking, and we are all still waking. Each of us had a set of experiences that shaped us. We meet people where they are out of respect for those experiences. Then we create new ones that reshape how people see themselves and the systems around them. Listen to learn, not confirm. Starting where people are requires that we listen. How we do it matters. At our best, we listen to learn, not confirm. Without intention, we tend to listen to confirm all the ways the other person is who we've decided they will be. We scan the conversation looking for evidence that they are good or bad or this or that. In listening to confirm, we close the door to discovering who people really are. When we listen, we show interest and respect. Because of this, people recognize you and the organization as unique, sensing a home to which they want to belong. Suspend judgment. It's easy to judge. A snap judgment can simplify things quickly. Resisting that impulse requires us giving up the sense of security that comes with being certain of something. Work from the assumption that the people you meet are showing up the best they can. Yeah, oftentimes people's best, including our own, is not great. They have a narrow view, they are overly self-interested or acting out. Still, we have no idea what struggles people have faced, what they've been taught, or what happened earlier in their day. Remember that to build a big enough we to beat back greed and hate, we'll need to suspend judgment and create opportunities for people to surprise us. Each of us must decide for ourselves how much judgment we can suspend. It's a personal decision informed by the experiences that shaped us, including our identity. While there'll be different limits for each person, having more of us move into the uncomfortable broadens who we can reach and the scope of what we can change. Uncover motivations. When we listen, we want to know what people want, but also why. Is it their children's safety, their pocketbook, their love of the neighborhood? We move people to action by knowing what most motivates them, what many organizers call self-interest. The more we get to know people, the more we uncover their deeper motivations. Maybe the person has a hunger to step into a larger role in life. Or maybe someone craves a sense of belonging, of feeling less alone. Or it could be they want a legacy of giving back. Whatever the motivation, we connect these deeper drives to the work of the organizing. The same goes for the people with power we seek to move. We want to know what they are most motivated by and develop our strategy with these answers in mind. When we don't know what most motivates someone, moving them to act is guesswork, and there's too much at stake for guesswork. The one-on-one. The place where we practice starting where people are and suspending judgment is in a one-on-one meeting, maybe the most fundamental organizing act of all. A one-on-one is two people sitting down to understand each other's path, to draw meaning from our journeys, and find a point of connection that could lead to building power together. It is how we come to know the source of someone's anger and their vision of what could be. Done right, a one-on-one can be life-changing. A conversation that starts with someone wondering why they said yes to the meeting turns into a gift, revealing things about them and society they had never seen so clearly until you, the organizer, came into their life. What an amazing thing to give another person. A one-on-one is not an interview. We must share our story too. We want the other person to leave the conversation feeling intrigued and energized, not exposed, wondering if they shared too much. Done well, the meeting will stand out as radically different from most conversations in their life. The pace of today's organizing can tempt us to skip this practice because we have to get down to business. But people, this is the business. Make the complicated simple. If the people we're organizing have to Google what we're saying, we are in deep shit. The people who abuse power deliberately make things hard to understand as a way to remain in power. If things are too complex, we start to believe they are the experts. The organizer's job is to call their bluff and flip that belief on its head, to make the complicated simple, and remind people that we are the experts on our realities. There's been a tendency lately to do the opposite, to instead make the simple complicated, to lead with words, both technical and ideological, that leave lots of people scratching their head, wondering if they came to the right meeting. This doesn't mean the ideas or the vision inside the big words are wrong, but how they're introduced matters. We are here to make people feel powerful, not stupid. Keep it simple, build with people, and then when the time is right, fold in the more complicated language and frameworks, and then only if it makes the work stronger. Chapter 3, Campaigns, because we organize to win. Get in fights to win. We chant, "I believe that we will win," but the truth is, most people don't. A good campaign can change that. People need a reason to believe in winning something, even if that win is imperfect, is our antidote to cynicism. Teaching people how to win and win early is the secret sauce of organizing. When we come into people's lives, they have every right to be skeptical. Most people have not experienced much winning. We must prove that this is going to be different. I have found no better way to do this than to actually win something. The biggest wins in organizing come on the backs of smaller wins. These stepping stone fights advance our ideas, build the confidence of our people, and create tipping points that move our dreams from improbable to inevitable. Find widely and deeply felt issues. An issue that only 5 or 6 people care about will not build much power. An issue that everyone agrees on, but no one will get off the couch for, won't spark the energy needed to win. That's why we seek issues that are widely and deeply felt. One without the other will not get it done. One way we find widely and deeply felt issues is through listening. We can do this on the doors, at the diner, in the congregation, the workplace, online, or wherever people are. The place from where we listen will differ, but it is the listening that helps us find the issues that people will fight for. When you listen for issues and then work on the ones most widely and deeply felt, you will build bigger bases much faster. Never again will you believe it's hard to get people involved. Cutting an issue. Massive structural problems feel overwhelming. Facing them, we often feel defeated before we've even started. And it is here that many well-meaning efforts fail, because they propose no specific solution and pressure no specific decision maker. Yeah, they may raise awareness about the problem, but in the end, little changes. That's why we cut out a more discrete part of the problem and turn it into a specific solution. Then we have something we can organize on and win. We then use that progress as a stepping stone towards a larger cut of the problem, and so on. Once you know how to do this, you will see potential to organize and win everywhere. Organize toward North Stars. In the beginning, we cut issues to win, and win soon, to build people's faith in organizing. But we ultimately organize toward our North Star, the larger change we want to create, even if getting there will take years, decades, even lifetimes. Without a North Star, we may win things here and there, but we'll never reach our destination. You don't need a North Star to begin. In fact, holding too tightly to one might keep you from ever starting. But eventually, you should know where it all is heading. Then your campaigns become stepping stones to get you there. Many of those steps will be issue-based victories, but also members signed up, leaders developed, and relationships built. You need to know where you are heading and build a staircase to get you there. Power concedes nothing without a demand. There's a reason the Frederick Douglass quote, "Power concedes nothing without a demand," is our most enduring organizing axiom. We are not putting forth broad wishes or generalizations, but specific, actionable demands and taking them to the doorstep of someone with the power to deliver. We use the word demand intentionally. A demand is something due or owed. We are not requesting a favor or looking for kindness, but rather we are insisting on getting what we deserve. There are times and places where the word demand isn't going to make sense publicly. In some contexts, it can backfire. But the spirit behind the word, that this is something we are owed and deserved versus something we're begging for, is essential for members to feel in their bones. Power analysis first, strategy second. Your strategy is never better than your power analysis. Even with a good power analysis, it's hard to win. Without one, it's impossible. There are all kinds of things you can run a power analysis on. You can run it on your organization, the community or workplace you're organizing in, your state at large, or your state legislature specifically. Start by working through one individual decision maker and then move to more complicated bodies. The strategy to win sits inside the answer to these questions about the people you need to move. What do they have power over? Who has power over them? What do they most want? And what do they most fear? Once you have the answers, you have all you need to determine what they can move and who and what will motivate them to do it. This is the foundation of your strategy. Finally, if they're an adversarial person with power and you will be coming for them, no, they will be coming for you. You need to understand what power they have over the organization and its members. This doesn't mean you don't take them on, but it is a reminder to be fully prepared for the backlash that is likely to come. Get to the table. We organize to win things. That requires being at the negotiating table. Yes, the table is complicated. We often leave the table and go back to the streets, but we are always trying to get there, pushing, prodding, building, so we can deliver the relief that people need. We do this knowing that in many cases we need to flip, reorganize, and reimagine the table, but we do have to be at it if we're serious about winning. Otherwise, we will not win what people need, or some transactional operative will be sitting in our place, settling for a lesser win, and taking credit all the same. The table is where people gain experiences and get tougher. It's where we learn up close how power operates and how to be skilled negotiators on our own behalf. Insight and skills that'll be essential as we move towards demands that are more transformative and decision makers more powerful. Tell the story. The organization's members have little time and more choices than ever on how to spend it. You want them to decide the organization and its campaigns are a priority. One way we do that is by telling the story of the fight and making it binge-worthy. People love a story, and a strong campaign has all the elements of a good one. We have a protagonist, us, an antagonist, the bad guy. We have the initial action, the bad stuff the bad guy did to start the whole thing. We then have conflict, people fighting back, and finally, hanging in the balance is the question of how it all will end. Having all the elements of a good story doesn't mean much if we're not telling it. Telling our story is especially important when we win. People are hunting for hope, and every win, even a step toward that win, is a chance to help them find it. Chapter 4, Action. Because acting is how we make change. Direct action. Direct action takes the crisis to the person who created it in the first place. It is a nonviolent public act taken by a group of people to motivate decision makers to change their behavior or position. Direct action takes place outside of cultural norms. This is what gives the act its power. The action brings the crisis to light, exposing who is harmed and who is responsible. For a moment, the truth is laid bare for all to see. We are no longer the only ones agitated. The person creating the harm is now agitated too. There are many victories in good direct action. The most straightforward is winning. The decision maker agrees to our demands, the bill passes, a threat to people's livelihood is thwarted. It doesn't stop there. Lacking power strips people of their dignity. When a community takes direct action together, dignity is restored on the spot, right then and there. The action is in the reaction. When devising tactics, public meetings, press conferences, protests, we tend to focus on our action. We come up with an idea and are often running on the details. What we should be most concerned with is the reaction to our action. The reaction may be one we intend or completely random. Which of the two is up to us? For example, we might want a decision maker to agree to a meeting, or a media hit that strengthens our hand, or for the decision maker to overreact and weaken theirs. There are times when we don't know what to do, so we come up with something to keep people in motion. It happens to the best of us. But if you can step back and get clear on the reaction you want, the actions you organize will be more strategic. Action is the lifeblood. While we develop actions to spur specific reactions, we'll see how our choice to act at all, whether knocking on doors or holding a big event, will spur more and better reactions than standing still. Action has magnetism that pulls people, money, and media toward you. Over and over, you'll look back and see all that came into being through the choice to be an organization that acts. Yes, there are times for pausing. We need space to reflect, to go back to the drawing board, or rest up before the next big push. But ultimately in organizing, it is through action that we spark reactions in the world and breathe life into the organization and its people. Question the Be Nice Rule. Take notice when powerful people who do evil things tell you to be nice. In most contexts, the Be Nice Rule makes sense, creating norms as to how we treat one another. But in the hands of people who abuse power, it can be a tool to temper resistance. Be patient a while longer. Send another nicely worded letter requesting action. Let the newly created committee look into it. Ultimately, always of saying, stay in your place and we are not going to do shit about your problem. When this is the case, we are called to nonviolent direct action outside the norms designed to protect power. Sure, we first send a letter asking for the meeting we want or the progress we seek, but when the accepted protocols fail, we must ask who they were meant to serve. Is it nice to bring 1,000 unwanted guests to protest at someone's house? Of course not. Most of the nonviolent actions, and it's important to note nonviolent, that have brought oppositional power to the table would not be considered nice. In fact, it was their out-of-bounds nature that inspired the reaction we needed. Prepare, act, digest. prepare ACT Digest. Repeat these steps over and over, and the members of the organization will become confident and wise in ways hard to measure but easy to feel. Preparing people for action is as important as anything we do to develop leaders. It's how we set people up for success, helping them feel more assured and excited to take on greater leadership. Then we move to action, and then we digest. And it is through digesting the experience that we gather insight from our action. And because we do it in groups, we unearth and embody those lessons together. When debriefing, be curious, seek to understand, and let that hunger to know inspire your questions. It's not just what went well and what didn't. It's understanding why something didn't work, and just as importantly, but often undervalued, why it did. Chapter 5, Developing Leaders. Because true organizers are always developing human potential. Seek out leaders. I have yet to have someone show up to a meeting and announce that they are a leader. That's why we're constantly on the lookout for people who could become one. Here are some of the things we look for. Are they someone people follow? Or could they build a following with more training and experience? Organizing people is not the work of the organizer alone. We need members who bring people with them and can move the group in the right direction. Are they willing to create tension? There are people who refuse to confront those preying on the community. The last thing you want is someone persuading people to avoid conflict. This does not mean blocking people who struggle with confrontation from the organization. That would weed out too many people. But someone who is steadfast against it will constantly throw a wrench in the gears of action. Are they looking to grow? The best leaders begin to see the organization as a pathway towards more than winning on issues, but also personal growth. Notice if people are curious about how things work, about other people, about their own development. Develop your lens of what you're looking for, then go recruit the next generation of great leaders into this work. The organization exists for the members. Assuming it has paid staff, it should treat them well, in line with the values we seek to move in the world. But the organization does not exist for the staff, even if we are of the class of people we organize. We are here to advance the power and interest of the members. The agenda is set by the members. The governing body is elected by the members. The language of the organization should resonate with the members. Our best organizing happens when the members are our compass. We are blessed to be in partnership with and in service to people who need and want to organize. They have signed up as volunteers to invest and risk their time, their talent, and their money in the organization. If the organization begins to exist for the staff at the expense of the members, we must ask if we are still organizing. Create the arena. We organize all kinds of things, meetings, actions, and more, to advance campaigns and win real change. But that's not the only reason. We organize to create an arena for people to grow. Meetings are spaces where decisions are made and a place for people to learn. Actions are designed to pressure a decision maker and an arena for people to feel their power. Press events are places to tell our story and an arena for people to know their story matters. We create a great stage for people to grow, often one at a time, sometimes by the thousands. The best political education happens not in the classroom, but in the street and in the debrief. Meaning is made, deceptions revealed, confidence built. This happens for people in leadership roles, big and small, when we create the arena. Agitation as an act of love. Don't overthink agitation. It is simply the act of creating tension that inspires people to act and act differently. Unable to see a path towards change, we adapt, often at great cost. Organizers are here to create a new discomfort. we have come to call the question about the systems and stories that rule our lives. We all have limiting beliefs about ourselves. For instance, I am not a person who rocks the boat, or I am not someone who speaks to crowds. These limiting beliefs extend to what we believe our community is capable of. People here don't want to come together. Our community will always be this way. We will never have power. That people believe these things is no accident. It's by design. These myths maintain the status quo, serving only those who abuse power. Our job is to expose all of it. The gap between how things are and how they should be, where each of us is now and where we could be. Done right, agitation is an act of love in service of new possibilities. Done wrong, it's clumsy and aggressive. Be sure you know the difference. Share the work. Some organizers can point to what they won, others to what they built, still others to leaders they developed. The best can point to all three. That is why we create opportunities for people to take on work, grow through that work, and expand who is moving the organization forward. It's natural that we sometimes choose to hold the work instead of asking others to do it. Try to be mindful of why. Sometimes we think that a task must be done in a specific way, and we are best equipped to do it. In some cases, this may be true, but it could also be an opportunity to coach someone through it so they can also do it well. Or maybe we're uncomfortable asking people to do things. We may believe we're being nice by taking on all the work. But who are we to decide that for another person? It's okay to be uncomfortable asking people to take on more work. Just don't get stuck there. Ask people to commit. In organizing, we are constantly asking people to do things. We ask people to come to meetings, knock on doors, or lead an action. We not only ask people to do things, we ask them to commit to do things. We are not vague or passive-aggressive. We don't drop hints. Our asks are clear and direct. Instead of saying, "It would be great if you could come to the meeting," we tell someone why the meeting is in their interest and ask for a firm commitment to show up and bring others. Organizing is impossible without getting lots of people to commit to do things. If this is hard for you, reflect on why that is. Work with it. Take some risks. Soon you'll find out it's not as hard as you thought and that people appreciate being asked and asked directly. In doing so, you just made the organization a little less reliant on you. This is organizing. Celebrate often. Create a culture of celebration. You should celebrate the policy and political victories, but don't stop there. Rejoice in reaching a goal of new members recruited, a well-organized action, or the member who just had a breakthrough. We humans have a negativity bias. We tend to survey the landscape for threats. But that programming helps us only so much today. We're no longer hunters and gatherers on the lookout for some mountain lion we got to outrun. So drop the focus on all that is wrong. Being on a team where the culture involves tallying up all the ways the organization is stacking up, it's exhausting. Flip that script by celebrating where you're succeeding. This doesn't mean brushing the broken parts under the rug. You must acknowledge those and figure out what needs fixing. But guess what? The organizations we're building will never be perfect. Lift up what's working, revel in it, commemorate it, give thanks for it. Don't make studying the imperfections the default, or you'll be a small band of grumpy people, and we have enough of those already. Chapter 6, The Organizer. Because organizing starts with you and your humanity. Be curious. Every good organizer I know is curious about people. Their paths, their hopes, their fears. They want to know what shaped you, what is blocking you, and what drives you. The best organizers, the truly great ones, are constantly trying to understand the human condition and the person in front of them. This curiosity extends beyond individual people to the systems of people, especially power and culture. Be insatiable in trying to understand them, constantly refining your analysis. Then, when you're sure you figured it out, step back and consider the situation from a new angle, always willing to learn and unlearn. I have yet to meet a great organizer who did not have or develop this trait of curiosity. Whether it comes easy to you or not, develop it and your organizing will be better. Respect people's lives. Most people we organize did not ask us to come into their lives, and yet we did. We have recruited them onto a path that will require risk and include setbacks. On the path towards change, things often get harder before they get better. And we can talk of how we respect people, or we can prove it, and how we value their time, their ideas, and the sacrifices they make. People are meeting us halfway by signing up. Now we want to inspire them to take the next step. We come prepared, do our homework, follow up. This includes having a theory to win. When we organize people into a fight, they come in hopes of change. We then have a duty to build a plan to bring that change to life, or at least to make it more possible. Riling people up around a big demand and not doing the work to come up with a credible, even somewhat credible strategy, wastes people's time, sours them on organizing, and the organization is viewed as one of big talk and no results. We're messing with people's lives. Let's make it worth the risk. Be as humble as you are bold. There is a place between being bold as a lion and as humble as a dove. Find it. It takes nerve to organize a neighborhood, a housing complex, or a workplace. You are constantly agitating and inspiring people to take on big adventures, unsure of how things will turn out. Embrace this boldness, because we need more organizers who push us to see things we could have never imagined. Choosing the safest, surest route over and over does not serve us. We need the daring, confident, borderline arrogant parts of you, because we have come to take on Goliath. Many Goliaths. If organizing requires boldness, it requires as much humility. You will succeed mightily and fail miserably. Some days you'll want to scream with joy from the rooftops. Other days, hide under a rock. More than once, you'll do both on the same day. The key is to stay close to the members, to never think we are smarter than anyone or everyone else, to not lose our ability to listen, to learn, to see things anew, to always act with the curiosity and the humility of a beginner. You're an organizer, not a facilitator. The community needs more than a great facilitator. They need a great organizer. You listen, yes. You start where people are, yes. You also get to have an opinion. You are an organizer recruited by or deployed to the community to bring the best counsel on how to get it done. Do not reject this responsibility. Own it. It is essential that members of the organization hold power and make decisions, but this does not mean you are an impartial actor. The people screwing over the community have talented and trained people who advise them. You are that person for the community, blessed to have learned about and have a knack for organizing. Bring that to the table without apology. Acting as if you are a passive participant is disingenuous and serves no one. Notice when you're tracking the currents but not seeking to move them. Instead of wise counsel from an organizer, we hear, "It's not my place," or "This is a member-led effort." Many times, these statements are legit, but just as often, they are cover for someone being unwilling to put an idea on the table and back it up. If you start feeling like you're too much of a facilitator and not enough organizer, explore what's underneath that. Trust your gut and adjust. Become mindful, have a practice. Becoming a great organizer, it's more doable as we become more aware and whole human beings. Doing so requires a practice, one that helps us see more clearly what's happening in our head and heart. Your practice could be meditation, prayer, written reflections, or something else. The form is not the point, but having one is. When we're not mindful, we can go weeks or a lifetime knocked off course, reacting poorly to things and unaware as to why. But as we learn to slow the mental chatter, we can see when our reaction is not about the person in front of us, but instead our own unmet need or past hurt. Mindful of this, we can respond from a sturdier place, showing up with compassion and grace. Look, we wake up each day trying to bring lots of people together to do very hard things. Much can and will go wrong in such a venture. Having a place to expand your understanding of the human condition, including your own, is not extra credit. It's the fundamental that we're rarely trained in, but among the most essential and profound gifts of being on this path. Conclusion. You are an organizer, and you are needed more than ever. These are the fundamentals I come back to. The most authentic moments in my organizing have been possible because of them. They are not a checklist or a spreadsheet, but a way of approaching the craft. If you have read this far, you are an organizer, or curious about becoming one. Seize that impulse. Be with people. Feel their pain, know their dreams, and see what they see. Listen intently, pull people together, bring out their genius, find common ground, and go into battle as one. Along the way, you will build trust and explore the uncommon ground, creating space for people to awaken, not alone, but in a room together. More than ever, we need good organizers, not just in title, but in practice. People who still believe in people, who want to invest in others, who can see beyond their own needs towards the needs of the whole. I hope you are one of those people. You are not a passive observer, but an organizer. An organizer in one of the most consequential periods in human history. You are here to stir the pot, to take the crisis to those who created it, to transform hearts and minds on the way to transforming how the whole thing works. You bring not bread, but yeast. You are here to agitate and inspire more of us to ask hard questions, uncover hidden truths, realize our power, and do all of this with lots of other people. What an amazing thing. I'll close with this from Thomas McGrath's Letter to an Imaginary Friend. Blessed the agitator whose touch makes the dead walk. Blessed the organizer who discovers the strength of wounds. Blessed all fighters. This has been the Fundamentals of Community Organizing. Now that you've listened, visit fundamentalsoforganizing.org. Sign up for a training. Tell us what you're doing in your community. Tell us what you're hungry for. We want to spread the gospel of organizing, and you are key to making that happen. See you in the streets. This podcast was produced by Fundamentals of Organizing and the Mashup Americans. It is executive produced by Amy S. Choi and Rebecca Lair. Our senior producer is Sarah Pellegrini. Our production manager is Shelby Sandlin.